I've been waiting on this.
I've been waiting too. What's going on, people? It's your boy Izzy.
It's your boy Taz.
And this is the Taz and Izzy show. Ah, feels good to be back. We finally have a guest after a 2-week absence of having no guests.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, apparently you had your first exam.
Yeah.
How did it go?
It was interesting because it's open book, but I feel like just because of the type of lecture we have, even if it's open book, the info is just like horrible.
What do you mean?
Like, not the info, but like the question asking is just like weird. Like, I'm like, he's like, he writes questions the way he thinks, and the way he thinks is all over the place.
Right.
So I won't expose him because I want him to keep his job. But I feel like it's just so annoying because, like, even if you have a certain amount of information, you have to read the question and know how to apply it. Otherwise, it's just like, it's not gonna work.
But how do you think it went?
I think it was alright. I think it was okay. It's one of those like 60% of my mark.
Oh, I hate those.
Yeah, so those. It's interesting. Although, like, I don't need that much to pass though because of my other stuff, but it's cool.
Well, that's good. Happy it went well. But yeah, I think it's time to introduce our guest. Let me just give you a quick little summary about him. He is half Romanian.
Full half.
He is a former army official.
Hey.
Also, he's a former Mr. Essex.
Hey.
He's a pure blood.
A pure blood.
He's a coffee connoisseur. Yep. And he also got the English Barista of the Year 2016.
Hey, flowers in the coffee. In
it's the one and only Dan Pledge.
Yo, what's going on?
Is it Pledge or Pledge?
Yeah, we can go Pledge.
Pledge, yeah. What's going on, bro? How you doing?
I'm alright, mate. Yeah, had the disso in last week, so...
Dissertation? Oh, wow.
Yeah, mate, that's so it's a bit of relief, you know? So, a couple of group projects in as well, so a few less things to worry about. So it's good, man.
That's good. Is this your first time ever doing a podcast or anything like this?
Yeah, it's the first time.
Does it feel weird?
It's kind of strange.
Yeah. It is, isn't it?
We're just in your bedroom chilling, but...
Whoa, don't expose the place. But yeah, I thought a great way to like break the ice, break any nerves would be to do a game.
Okay.
I call it Trivial Question or Trivial Pursuit, whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to ask you 3 questions and you can veto one of them.
Okay.
But you won't know what the 3 questions are.
Yeah, shit. Okay.
Okay. So the first question is, what is the worst date you've ever been on?
Worst date I've ever been on?
Yeah.
Man, I haven't been on many dates.
But you've been on dates.
With my girlfriend and my ex, that's it.
And what's their worst date?
In a while, wow, yes, been on. Obviously I'm going to say my ex, funnily enough.
It just happened to be the ex.
Yeah, yeah. There's no bad dates, mate. The only good dates.
Wow, yeah. Confidence.
Hey, okay. Alright, fine.
Alright, we'll give you that. I don't believe you, but we'll give you that. Have you ever hated someone on social media before?
Hated someone on social media.
Yeah, like behind the screen, just like saying hate.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's...
Okay.
But like, you read things quite a lot, don't you? And like, you don't need to know the person, and then like, you can already start to hate that person before you've even met them, just by going.
Can you give an example?
They say. Just like, there's a lot of people, like, especially like Twitter, so I've come off Twitter now, like, I used to use that, I don't use it anymore, because you'll see people like, give their opinion, and I think they kind of like expect people to care about it, and they think it's worth sharing when usually it's not. So little things like people like try to purposely like trigger other people on the internet, right?
True.
It's like a.
But have you been one of those people?
Have I been annoyed by things that I've seen on the internet before?
No, have you triggered someone on social media?
I wouldn't have thought so. I don't know, mate. I don't use social media all that often.
Dude.
You have me on social media. I post on Instagram maybe like once.
Yeah, it's true.
Once a month.
That's true.
You know, don't have Twitter. Don't do Facebook updates.
I have this thing where I believe that like people should have certain people should be allowed to post on Instagram.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and some people like their rights should be like revoked. You know what I mean? Because
I feel like need training. Yeah, like, honestly, license to use Twitter.
Because I'll be on Instagram like every day. You can ask my girl like every day. I'll be like, you know, some people just don't know what to post on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like some people actually need lessons. You know, on what not to say.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I would agree.
Last question. Mm-hmm. Probably the most heated one.
Glad I saved my veto, mate.
Have you ever been cheated on or cheated on someone?
Have I ever been cheated on?
Or have you done the cheating?
Yeah, I've done the cheating.
Oh!
Really?
Not like... Okay. No, this sounds bad. I feel like this is probably oversharing, right?
No, it's not, no, it's bro. Not. Yo, this is okay, what we do.
That's cool. Okay, so...
Spill your tea, my guy.
Yeah, the, an old friend from, like, college that I was... We were chatting for a bit, like... I was single at the time after I broke up with my ex. We were really good friends. She got this guy. She was with him for a little while, and he was, like... He was not good, mate. Like, he was like cheating on her, but she hadn't found out, and like it's one of those things when it's like it's not your place to say anything, but you know about it.
Okay.
And then it was at her party, we both got drunk, ended up kissing her. That was it. Nothing else. But like and then the guy saw but he's not yo, I remember looking up and just seeing him and I was like, oh snap.
Oh my
god. He got sober real quick.
And he didn't say anything. So I was like, okay. I won't say anything either. So kinda went unsaid for a while, and then whatever, they broke up. Not because of that, because she found out what he was doing.
Wow, Mr. Essex.
Yeah, mate. That was a one-time thing.
Yeah, that was the old you, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't do that now.
Oh my days! Of course wow. Not. Well, of course not. I think now the listeners know more about you.
I should have eaten that.
They know more about who you are.
Switch.
But yeah, like, this is more of an open question. Do you guys think that cheating is ever justified?
Ever just a fad?
Just a fad.
I don't think
so. There's a reason behind.
Oh no, of course there's a reason behind it. I feel. I don't know. Yeah, but it like, can't just like, be like, oh.
No, do you think it's justified, right?
Yeah, justified. Yeah.
I'd say no. No, never.
Yeah.
In no situation.
If you want to be, if you want to kiss someone else, just leave me. You know what I mean? Let's break up. Don't do it then.
Yeah.
Why do you have to be with me and be with someone else?
I agree.
You get what I mean?
Yeah. Nah, I'm the same. I just think like, you must really not love the person that you're with to be able to kiss or.
Yeah, definitely.
Be with someone else.
I don't know. Some people are hurt, though. You know, some people go through, like, trauma and stuff, and it's hard to, like, trust one person. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or some people just like, oh, you know, they hold on to their independentness. That's not a word. But, like, independence. They want to hold on to their independence. And so, like, they might just, like, you know, want to feel in control of their lives because they feel like, you know, if they're with one person, you control them a lot, so they'd rather, like, spread out their options. But I feel like I don't know. It can't be justified in my eyes.
Nah, me neither. But I feel like the person will justify it. The person who's done the cheating will try and justify it and really intrigue. There's no excuse. Do you feel like there are reasons why males and females like cheat differently? Or do you feel like it's all for the same reason that they cheat on the person?
Good question.
Like the motivation behind a male and a female. Do you think that they're different or they're quite the same?
Is there any difference?
I think so. I feel like when a male cheats on their partner, it's more of like a ego thing.
Right, okay.
It's like to fulfill their ego and like fuel it up more. But I feel like when a female does it, it's more from an emotional place where they don't feel like their partner is...
Yeah,
given enough emotional support and availability that they want.
But it's still like the same with guys and girls. Then like, there's both something missing in that relationship, so they're trying to find it somewhere else. I see what you mean, but I think there's probably more differences than just gender, right? So
true, and also like this is from what I've seen.
Yeah,
I feel like more males cheat than girls cheat.
Mm-hmm.
It could be 50-50, but from what I've seen, more males cheat than girls cheat on.
I mean, on I boys. Think
it's a stigma, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a stigma, but I feel like as well, like I think part of the reason why we hear mostly that girls are getting cheated on is because girls report when they get cheated on.
Yeah, it's, you know what I mean? If you're a guy,
guys don't. I'm not gonna come on the internet and be like, "Yo, this girl did me dirty. Yeah. You know, she broke my heart. You know, it's in two. She has the other piece. You know what I mean?" It's like, but we hear like girls, and especially girls would be like, the girls that got cheated on and their friends, you know, will be like spreading the news and all that. But when a guy gets cheated on, it's like kind of like under wraps, and the guys, your boys won't go around saying it or defending you. You know what I mean?
It's true. This is it. Like when you ask me if I've cheated on or been cheated on, like even if I had been cheated on, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
I don't think I would have said that, mate. Because it's like I don't know. It's like admitting something as a guy, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, but like, what is that Ouch. About? Like, is that like a masculine thing? Like, we just...
I think so.
It's like an image thing. That's what I'm saying.
You can hold your girl down.
Well, yeah. Okay. And actually, that leads to why you're here, you know? Because obviously, your latest Instagram post...
Yeah.
Go follow Dan on Instagram. Do you want to plug it real quick?
Essex Dan, mate. You know
what it is. Like, obviously, you posted something that was quite quite vulnerable and quite heartfelt.
Oh, yeah.
What was the reason like behind posting it?
Reason behind posting it?
Yeah, we'll start with
it. I think it was like a helpful exercise for myself to kind of really kind of write down my story, I guess. And like just like, sometimes like writing down how you're feeling or like saying how you're feeling kind of like takes the power out of that situation.
Right.
And I felt so kind of partly it was like an exercise for myself, partly it was a way of me telling other people about how I felt without being too in their face. And it's obviously a bit easier to do when you're sitting behind a screen. It's easier to share, and sometimes that can be a useful thing, sometimes it can be a bad thing. And also just as a way, like, I know there's people that follow me that are going through like periods of bad mental health, and I guess I just wanted to be like, I don't know, like I would hope that if someone else could read it that they could take something away from it and like apply it to their situation or to their lives, and that it would help them, I guess.
I like that, man. Yeah. Now it was when I saw it, I was like it was rare to see. It was kind of refreshing to see something like that, because on Instagram it's very how do I say this? It's people put their best.
Yeah, for sure.
The best, what do you call it?
The best version.
Yeah, of themselves. Yeah. Like, we don't get the other side.
No.
So when I saw that, I was like, yeah, that's that's amazing from you. And
just more generally, I guess, like, when you're going through social media and you're like, you know, you're scrolling through whatever, and it's like every single post you see, it's like,
happy.
Oh, damn, they're having a great time.
Yeah.
Oh, look at them on their holiday, or look at this new thing that they've brought, whatever. And then people get the fear of missing out and all of that, and it's like... Yeah, sometimes I feel like it's just helpful to see something that's a bit more like grounded and down to earth, and is a bit more like representative of their life. Because like, obviously, like I've had, even you know, when I've been struggling, like I still had good times. And if I only posted those, then it would, you know, that would not be representative of my life.
True.
Yeah. True. So do you think it's like fake then? What people do, like to portray like one side and leave the other, or do you think like, oh, you can,
I mean,
you might as well post the episode
at the end of the day, it's like it's your choice, you know. No one's forcing you to put the bad side or the good side, but sometimes it's just refreshing to see that relate, like people can relate to
you. No one would go on Instagram if every time you went on Instagram every post was just like, oh, I'm having a terrible time. Like, the opposite would happen.
Of course,
you know, it could definitely be a bit more balanced than it is.
What was crazy is like when I was reading your caption, I got to the second paragraph and it was like, in January you were diagnosed with anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
And like, I literally had no clue.
Yeah.
Me neither. I saw it and I was like,
no one knew.
I was like,
because the thing about you, like people like that don't know you, you're a bubbly person. Like every time people talk to you, it's like good energy, positive vibes.
Yeah.
So when I saw this, I was like, no clue.
Yeah.
There were no hints.
Yeah.
Towards it, I was just so surprised.
It was crazy. Cause I was like, damn, like. If it's Dan, then I need to be on top of my you know, because I was like, yo, he's like, you know, one of the most positive people I know at Harvard, you know.
Yeah,
well, I think so. I was meeting up with Father Wood for a bit, like when he found out that I was going through a bit of a tough time, and chatting to him, and kind of like came to a realization that what I thought other people saw of me was different to what people saw of me. Like I think, like I thought people, I don't know, see me in a worse way or whatever. But then like Alice was like, oh no, Dan, like people look at you and they think, oh, you know, like he's a confident guy, he's an outgoing guy, or whatever. And that is the case most of the time. But I think because I realised that people's kind of like perception of me was so different to like what I was actually thinking and like feeling and going through at that time, that like, yeah, not that I wanted to change that perception, but just like, you know, show people what was actually like, how I was actually feeling, what was actually going on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because especially like if you look at someone and you think, oh, they've got it all sorted, or like you look at me, you said, I didn't know anything, I didn't see any anxiety, I didn't see any depression. Like, I wouldn't want people to think that, like, oh, that's my life, it's great, it's fluffy. Like, there's more going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because that's more obtainable for someone else to look at, and I don't know. Do you get where I'm going?
I get you. Did you feel like you had to put a front for just to cover the deep anxiety things and the passion that you had. Do you think you had to overcompensate with like confidence?
Yeah, probably a little bit. And I think some of that was for other people, but probably also some of it was for me, because I was like, if I smile, if I, you know, play up this person that's feeling great, then maybe that will make me feel better.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, probably, but as much for myself as it was for kind of other people.
Did you have like any hard days at Harbour?
At Harbour?
Yeah.
Like, definitely. 100%. Mm. Yeah.
Because Harbour is a place full of people. Like, you have to always talk to someone.
This is it, right? And especially, being at a place like church is sad, isn't it? Because it's like, it should be the place where you can be most vulnerable and be most open and be most real about who you are.
True.
But I definitely think there's times when you can not just be at Harbour, but just any church in general. And like, obviously, like, we like to focus on the good things and that. So kind of that, in a way, for me, it was like an expectation that I should be behaving that way.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's interesting that you said that question, because even when I've been going to Harbour Church for like 3 years. Even when I first got there, I always felt this expectation to always be happy and like always be smiley, always talk about the good things happening in my life. And like, that's not really what church should be. Church should be a place where, like, if you're going through something, you should be able to talk to someone and then they can help you out with whatever's happening. Yeah. So I don't know why church has that kind of effect on like established Christians like us to always say the good things going on in our life.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird, because even when like it's reaching a certain point in worship and you see someone now breaking down and crying, you know, people were giving them eyes like, whoa, like, I wonder what's going on in their life. You know what I mean? Knowing that you probably have something going on in your life, you know what I mean? But it's still kind of weird, like, why are they crying now? You know, and
your question, find it hard at Harbour, asked that, like, that was another thing. It's like, it became like that I wasn't getting prayer for things that I needed prayer for, because I was so afraid that, like, it was like my anxiety, but I was like, if I put my hand up and, you know, if the person at the front says, okay, tonight we're going to pray for someone with this problem or this addiction or whatever, I put my hand up when he says, you know, let's pray for this, or she says, like, let's pray for this, people are going to look at me and be like, so I think that was putting me off getting prayer. And then I think it came a point when I was like, realised, and I was like, this isn't healthy, and like, this needs to change. And especially like being like a leader in small groups and in crews and that kind of thing, it's like, how can I expect other people to like be vulnerable unless I'm going to be like vulnerable myself?
True.
And, like,
that's a good point.
It's the way it works, isn't it? Like, if you want to meet up with someone in any relationship, like, if you expect that person to open up, you have to kind of set the tone first.
Yeah.
So.
And I feel like when it comes to people with mental health issues, I feel like the first step should be being able to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. But doing that first step is actually very hard.
Yeah.
Because firstly, you're not sure who to talk to. And sometimes you feel you're by yourself, so like you feel like no one can talk to you or can relate to you. So how did you go through that process of actually finding someone to talk to about this?
Yeah. So I would say, like, basically, I think I'd been suffering with like depression and anxiety for like quite a lot longer than I kind of realised, and it was going on before I was diagnosed.
I find that so weird when you say that, man. I can't see you with
you.
Just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, honestly. This is it. Even when I saw the post, I was like,
that's not him.
So like, it had been going on a lot longer than I think I'd realised, and there was like different like psychological, sociological problems, whatever. So I'd have like headaches and I'd feel sick, and I'd been to the doctors a few times, like to try and find out, like, something's wrong with me, I don't know what it is. Had like, you know, blood tests and that kind of thing. Like, they didn't find anything, and I was like, what's going on? I don't know what's going on. And it reached a kind of like a culmination over Christmas just gone, and it was like Christmas Day, and I was just sitting in my room, like, just feeling like super low, like really tearful, and I was like, what's going on? Like, I'm usually like, want to be downstairs with my family and you know, all of that, and like, we had guests over and everyone was playing games downstairs, and I was just kind of sitting upstairs, and I was like, I just could literally, like, I just felt sick, and I was like, I can't go downstairs. And that was when I realized, I was like, okay, like, I need to change this. So when I come back to uni, I decided to go back to the doctors again and just be like, okay, like this is what I'm feeling, like help me pretty much. And I remember breaking down in the doctors. It was like that whole day was real tough, man. Yeah. I was sitting in the open, so like, so you have to wait to obviously be seen in the mornings, and it's so busy in Portsmouth, right? I got there at like 8:45 in the morning. They opened the gates at 9 to let everyone in. And I was probably waiting like an hour and a half to be seen by a doctor.
Wow.
And I was just sitting in the chair like,
that must have been the worst. Getting treated for anxiety while being anxious.
I was sitting there and it was like, there was like who else was in the waiting room? There was a guy with a kid in a pram, and he was just like rocking the pram because the baby was crying. And I remember just like hearing this like rock, and it was just driving me insane. Like I was like, just stop, like, can you not stop your kid from crying? Like, and I was like, and then like some other guy came in who was like a local, he had a few drinks, and he was like being a bit aggressive with the doctor staff, and was like, oh, I need to see someone, like I need some new medication. And they're like, you need to get an appointment and then whatever. And he came and sat down, and I purposely sat myself in the corner, right, to be like, give myself some space. And he came and sat next to me. And he started playing Candy Crush on his phone. Like slurping at a can of Coke.
Oh my god.
Sound on fire. And I was literally waiting, sitting there like, I was so close to walking out at that point. Mm. And then they called my name. So I went through. And that was a bit of a godsend, to be fair. And I spoke to them. And then I also that same day called up the University Wellbeing Service. Got in touch with them. And they offered me like an initial kind of like appointment the next day. Just to speak to someone and kind of like for them just to make contact with me and touch base and, you know, tell me what options I had and who I could speak to and that kind of thing. So that's kind of how I got to that stage of them being able to get
some help. Sounds like some process, man.
That week was tough. Like,
yeah, it sounds tough.
Yeah, man.
Were there people like that kind of knew or could tell?
No, I don't. This is it. There was like, I hadn't let anybody in before that. And I was always even, like, keeping up friends. Abby? Yeah, like Abby didn't even know, really.
Abby is Dan's girlfriend.
Yeah, she's my girlfriend. Like, yeah, so she didn't even really know what was going on. And like, as a guy, like when you're trying to keep all of this like hidden, and like, it just builds up and up and up.
It all comes out,
and then it just comes out. And you know, it was like it was affecting my relationships, not just with Abby, but just like friends in general, everything. And I was just getting like stressed and angry and taking it out on other people. So I was like, this needs to change, you know?
Yeah, like that's the, you know, that's probably the worst thing about being a man. Like this expectation placed on you.
Massively.
To have everything together.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that also came onto you because you felt like you had this expectation to keep everything together. Therefore, no one could understand where you're coming from. Yeah. Like, deal with it yourself.
That's definitely true. It's just like that. It's like it is our culture, isn't it? It's like within our society that it's like being a guy is like being like headstrong and being kind of like steadfast, and you know, not being a man in this culture isn't really about showing your emotions. No. It's just about like holding it all together and like grinding through it. It's just about that like grit and determination. And it's what you aspire to do, you know. But it's like that's not what being a man is about, and it's, you know, there's some real blurred lines there that that's something, you know, something needs to change.
No, I agree. I feel like it's harder to be vulnerable than it is to be strong.
Yeah, because people judge you, you know, like when you're being vulnerable, like you're literally like laying yourself down to be shot at, and it's like I definitely think from experience, like being vulnerable was the hardest thing I ever done. It was like it's not something that's like innate to us. Like nobody like knows how to be vulnerable. Like it's like a learned skill almost.
Yeah,
you know, like,
and it hurts. But
the same way you go to the gym and you train your muscles, like you have to train your head. Like you have to, you know, because if you
emotions,
don't,
it's kind of crazy because like I remember obviously because for those who don't know, I also had like my battle with mental health, but like also had a battle with sexual sin as well.
Mm.
And like telling my friends was like one of the like hardest things I ever had to do, right? And and obviously I make it a habit because even now when I came, this was when I was in Zim, when I told them, then when I came to Zim, I mean came to the UK, I told like Izzy, you know Michael and Matthew, like, you know, this is what goes on, this is what I've been going through, and I need a support system. So it's like kind of like having to be vulnerable in new settings, you know what I mean? So I feel like even now, wherever I go, you know, I have to always like kind of establish like a support system.
Yeah, you need
it. And you know, and that level of vulnerability is kind of every single time I'm having to be vulnerable. But I've noticed that, like, I think on your post you said, vulnerability is true courage.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah, right? Yeah, and it's kind of like how it's also how I see it as well. In the way that when you're hiding, that's how you're actually being a coward.
Mm.
You know, because you're getting into your little cave and it's only you who's going through it. And once you come out of the cave, you know, that's when you can stand up to what you're going through, you know?
No, I agree. Yeah,
there was, there's this author called Johan Hari, and he's basically like a, he's like a journalist, and he wrote a book about kind of like depression and anxiety and that kind of thing. And there's, in his book, he basically, he talks about this woman who's in East London, and she's been suffering with like chronic depression and anxiety for like 7 years, and it hasn't gotten any better. She's been on antidepressants for all of those years, and like antidepressants help, and it can help balance some of the chemical imbalances in your body, which can cause depression and can cause anxiety. But I don't think like medicine alone is enough to really help, or at least it wasn't for me. Like, it's about like behavioural changes and stuff like that as well. And basically, so this woman went to her, she tried different doctors, and she went there, and the guy who assessed her was like, I'm not going to stop giving you medication, like, I think you should carry on taking it, but I'm also going through, you know, anxiety and depression, and I know a few other people that are, and he was like, why don't we meet up, and basically, like, form a little community. So they started meeting up, these different people and the doctor, like, two or three times a week together, and they went to this place, I think it was like, they called it like Dog Shit Alley or something. It was like round the back of the doctors, and it was just this like horrendous alley that people had to walk down every day. And they basically decided like they were going to do something together, and they were going to meet up together and form like a little tribe, pretty much.
Okay.
And so they decided to learn. They decided to teach themselves how to do gardening. So they were watching like YouTube videos and reading books together and that kind of thing. And they decided. So they pretty much turned this entire like alleyway into like this really like beautiful garden.
Right.
And basically, like, the kind of point was it is that, like, that study and a few other studies found, like, that kind of, like, community and that, like, support was, like, twice as effective as taking just antidepressants.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Which is, it's mad, isn't it? It's, like, you, like, I think there's, like, these kind of, like, deep psychological needs that like every person has, like to be in a community, to know where you're going, like, and this
to be valued
all of this, and unless that's like fulfilled, then I don't think like it's not the cause of, if it, you know, if the cause of your depression and your anxiety isn't just some chemical imbalance in your body, but it's these other like underlying issues or like loneliness or something like that, then yeah, medicine alone is not gonna cut it. I don't think
I feel like that's actually a good point, because I feel like the medical world kind of, like, as much as science is really good and pushes forward, I feel like some of the, especially human problems, really can't be solved by just taking a pill down, because we're more than just, you know, our physical bodies, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
for
sure.
You know, you have to account for your spirit, you have to account for your soul.
Yeah.
And,
bro, the spirit's important. It's so important, like, feeding that spirit and making sure that it's healthy. Because when it comes to, like, depression, that is, you'll see that the spirit is low whenever anyone is going through anxiety or depression.
Yeah.
And, like, that needs to be fed, I feel.
Yeah, man.
Do you guys feel like God also comes into play into this whole getting over depression and anxiety?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's really hard to quantify. To quantify that and to be like, oh, you know, because if, like, I can say, like, if I take my tablets, you know, I feel like 30% better each week. Mm. Like, if I go out and, or if I go to church and meet people or whatever, like, again, that, like, perhaps I feel like 50% better that week. But like, it's really hard to quantify like how much better you feel through prayer and for praying to God. It's hard, isn't it? It's like, I don't know, man. But I definitely think like my faith is one of the things that kind of like pulled me through.
Yeah,
what I was going through.
No, that's good. I feel like God has to be part of it.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I always get like not sidetracked, but I just get irked when I see like people who, like atheists basically, and they kind of like get over depression. I'm like, that's so crazy to me, because I'm like, what are you holding on to,
yeah,
to get out of there? You know what I mean? Because, yeah, at least I know, like, God wants a better life.
It's the one thing you have.
You know,
right,
what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's going to be there. He's got a plan for me. But I feel like if you don't have that, I always get like, so where's this hope coming from?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, okay. I think their hope is to make sure that the Christians have no hope.
Wow.
That's what they're clinging on to.
Wow.
But yeah, and I was also going to ask, like, yeah, did the so obviously you posted it on social media, but do you also feel like social media was ironically the cause of some of the depression and anxiety?
I don't use social media all that often, so I don't think that was like, it certainly wasn't like a leading cause, but like, yeah, kind of like wider, just like
external factors.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely like plays a part when I'm already feeling low and I go on, you know, social media,
yeah,
and I see these things, and then but I wouldn't say that was like a root cause, okay, of my depression or anxiety, but in, you know, contributing factor.
Yeah, no, because the reason I ask, because I feel like with social media, it's a very dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
Or a platform to actually go on,
yeah,
to, because,
yeah,
it's just full of comparisons.
It's true, man.
You know, like every person that you see on there, 99% of the time you're going to, it's not you, so you're gonna have to compare, like,
you automatically. Know, there's the world's first internet rehab center in Washington. It started up like last year, I think. It's called Restart Washington.
Internet rehab center.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, I mean, it's a thing, and like, if it helps people, then that's great.
Of course, yeah. It sounds crazy, but it's actually practical.
Yeah, and
yeah, because
like,
people go on it.
Yeah, like a lot of people that like a vast majority of the people that go are like, pretty much like millennials, right? So like young guys and young girls that have had like addiction to social media, and like through that has caused them to have poor mental health. So that's one of the, and the other, like, the, you know what, the other group of people that go there, young guys that are addicted to video games. Literally. I know some people there.
If you need a hand.
Yeah. It's crazy, right?
No, that is crazy. But then again, you can flip it around,
yeah,
and actually be like, social media can be used for good.
It definitely, yeah,
because
it's not inherently,
like,
bad.
Like what you did,
good,
for example.
Yeah.
I feel like you use social media to your advantage, because,
mm-hmm,
you know people are gonna,
yeah,
tune into it. Just have
it,
a caption
together, you know,
that is practical and it can have a positive impact.
Yeah.
And then that can help people.
For sure.
So I feel like the internet, it's not inherently bad or inherently good. It just is. And it's how you use it and how you,
mm-hmm, yeah,
what you post on it, that's what makes it good or bad.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah, I think that's crazy. But do you feel like social media needs to be more, I don't know, like strict or revamped because of how congested it's getting right now?
It's like, yeah, it's hard. Like, I don't know how much you can really regulate it. Like, the internet, it kind of like mirrors that, like, freedom of speech, and
yeah,
like, just, you know, there was a UK law passed, some legislation passed that hasn't yet come into effect, but it's basically about that, how the UK government are actually going to monitor the internet, or not just monitor it as in like looking at what people are doing, but like,
yeah,
ban certain things.
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So with the whole free speech, I honestly don't know how I feel about that, because,
yeah,
I get both sides.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to make sure everyone's safe,
mm-hmm,
but then it can turn into people invading your privacy.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah. I don't know.
I actually don't know.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
People just need to be better. People just need to do better.
Yeah, if only it was that simple. Right?
I feel like the people that aren't really hiding anything, they won't really care that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the people that have maybe dodgy pasts that are more cautious,
yeah,
with like the,
yeah,
government getting involved.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, if you're innocent, you have nothing to,
yeah, I mean,
to
hide. I guess
internet history, mate.
We kind of touched on it before,
yeah,
but in addition to social media,
yeah,
do you feel like the pressures of being a man also comes into play with anxiety and depression and mental health in general?
Yeah, I mean, expectations in general are definitely like a big part of what, you know, can cause loneliness and anxiety and depression for probably for most people. But like, I think, yeah, it's more so as being a guy, it's like it really is like the hardest thing to do, right?
Yeah,
it just feels so against like what we're taught as, like,
yeah.
Like people look at, say, like people in the military, like people in special forces, right? People look at them and think, like, they are like the essence of manhood. Like,
yeah.
you see someone like Bear Grylls, or this SAS program that's on Channel 4 recently. Yeah. You know the guy on there, and he's absolutely ripped. You see that kind of person, you're like, oh, okay, like but like when you think about it, like these guys, like they spend like 24 hours a day as like a group, as like a cohort, as like a little unit.
True.
And it's like that's the thing that is like so important, I think. It's just like being in a group, and I think that's where like church can come in. It can be really, really 100%. Helpful, right, of connecting people. And it's like there's been a lot of research into kind of like what are some of like the main causes, right, of depression and anxiety.
Okay.
And one of those things is like it's like an innate feeling within all of us that we want to be like connected and as part of a group. And if you go back to like kind of our ancestors, and they're like fighting out on the savannah, right? Like they weren't the strongest, they weren't like the fastest, but like what kind of brought them together and made them strong is that they were able to like connect and like communicate effectively. And if you know, if you were back when, if you were in a tribe, and if you fell out of that tribe, right, you had real reason to be like anxious and depressed and scared, because like your life was at stake. And that kind of is, you know, that's so ingrained in us that when we're not part of like a group and we feel lonely, that's, you know, that's why we can feel like depression and anxiety now.
It's interesting that you say that about how connecting and being part of a group is one of the cures.
Mm-hmm.
But do you also feel like if you surround yourself with the wrong people, even though you might feel connected, it's like you shouldn't be connected to those kind of people. For like, for example, you have gangs, for example, right? There's a connectivity going on between people, but what they stand for, because like they're definitely not talking about emotions. Like they be scheming out here.
Yeah,
so it's like, do you feel like who you surround yourself with is equally as important as surrounding yourself?
Definitely, like there's that saying which is basically like you're like a reflection of the five people closest to you. And like I definitely, that's true. Like I'm someone that can be quite easily influenced at times, and it's like, you know what I mean? Like if you're like the people you're around, it rubs off on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure
it does, right?
You are your circle, really.
Yeah, man. This is it. And it's like if you're hanging out with people that, you know, into certain things or whatever, like you're going to find yourself falling into that.
That's true.
It's important to have the good company around you, right?
Honestly, you can even see it like just in your mannerisms and how like you changed when you got to uni. You didn't start saying some of the things you started saying when you got to uni. Like even the words you start saying change and everything, you know what I mean? Just by hanging around with people.
Yeah, we need to hang out with Jesus, you know? that's who we need to hang out with, man.
No.
But like on a serious, like we need to actually like read our Bible more and like listen to more
for sure
like podcasts about people like talking about Jesus so that we can ingrain that into ourselves and therefore reflect that onto the world almost.
Yeah, because you're not gonna find that anywhere else, are you?
I feel like I want to start a little like a trap phone challenge.
A trap phone challenge.
Like to put away my iPhone for like a good 2 weeks.
There was like this startup company, and they basically started selling these like boxes where like, so you know, when you go out for dinner and you look around and like everyone's on their phones.
Yeah.
So they brought out this like product you can buy, and everyone has to put their phones in, and then you lock it for a certain time and you can't get into it.
Yo, that's
a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's good until like someone's choking.
Yeah,
you can't call an ambulance. Yeah, right. Sorry, bro. The trap phone challenge. It actually is practical because you can still make calls on it.
Yeah, you start that.
I like get my little Nokia.
Nice, mate.
Now, just to close this topic off.
Yeah.
Why do you guys think it's so hard to be vulnerable?
Question.
I think it's pride. Well, for me, what I found was pride, and holding on to like my own perception of the reputation that I thought I had.
Yeah,
you know, because your reputation is a perception, right? You like, unless someone tells you that they think of you like this, your reputation is what you think of, which is a perception. You know what I mean? And so for me personally, I was holding on to what I thought people saw me as, which is funny because obviously if you're struggling, you think people look at you in a bad way, but once you have to be vulnerable, you think people look at you in a good way.
Yeah,
you know? And so like, it was kind of weird that I'll probably be letting my friends down, like, oh, Taz can't be the guy that goes through that, or you know, Taz can't be, you know what I mean?
That's what happened to you. You know, people were saying the same thing, like, you know, Dan's the guy that he's got everything under control. You can't be the guy to have problems, otherwise the world's going to
crack. Once you hear, like, even if you hear that from other people as well, like, that puts even more pressure on, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I feel like that's kind of sobering in a way. Like, when you find out that the people that you kind of see as fine do have problems.
Yes.
Because I think, especially as, like, human beings, we have, like, what we've been saying, we have a tendency to just compare ourselves to people. We usually tend to compare ourselves on the surface of things. And if you see someone laughing and smiling and you feel sad, you're like, oh, damn, they're better than me. You know what I mean? And an Instagram post goes a long way. But then once you know, like, you know, that, oh, snap, this guy goes through this as well, or this guy struggled with this, it's like, how can you be quick to judge other people, or judge yourself based on what other people are going through? You don't know what people are going through.
I feel you. And also, I feel like the people who I would see or think have it all together, when I see them going through struggles, I can relate. And then I don't feel as bad about myself anymore if I do happen to compare myself to them, because then it's like, oh, we are all human and we all go through things. But it's our comeback that matters more than the state that we're in the moment.
And I think another reason why it's just, like, so hard, like, to be vulnerable is just because it's, like, it feels so alien, doesn't it? Like, it just feels very unnatural and very uncomfortable at the start. It's just something that you kind of only get better at by doing.
No, that's good. I was going
to
ask.
It's hard to admit to ask for help as well, right? That's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I, like, struggled with, I think, the most, is just, like, actually, like, being like, okay, like, I need help. Because it's always been like, you know, I've always just kind of done things by myself, and, like, find ways to overcome different problems. And it was like I wasn't able to do that. And the longer I tried to do that, like, the worse and worse, like, things got. And then, you know, the harder it then gets to ask for people, because it's like, okay, like, I've started doing this now, and it's like, oh, you know, they're gonna judge me and all of this.
I was also, like, gonna ask, what do you think are some of the marginal steps that one can take in order to minimize any risks towards getting depression or anxiety?
I mean, there's only so much you can do. Like, it's like a lot of people, like, will, like, if you look at the statistics, lots of people will at some point in their life have a bad state of mental health. Like, it's kind of almost inevitable in the world that we live in. And there's only so much you can do to, like, prepare yourself for that. But I think definitely, like, having an outlet where it's healthy, like, say, like, a relationship where you can speak to someone about what's going on, or, like, support groups, or, like, going to a church, or, like, I don't know, like, being in a football, like, club, or, like, whatever, like, having groups of people to talk to is probably one of the ways you can perhaps, like try that, and mitigate some of it. But yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do.
I feel, for me, one of the first things that one can do is acknowledge that you have something going on, rather than just push it to the side and ignore it, because then that's when it builds up and it could explode at the worst time. For you, it was Christmas Day.
yeah, it was.
But, like, it could come out at the worst time. So acknowledge that you have, that something is going on. And then talk about it.
You
know, rather than just keep it to yourself. And feel like no one else has the problem. We all have problems.
That's it. And the more and more people that talk about it, like, the more normalized the
conversation
becomes,
has to be had.
I feel like I have a thing where I think that, or it might not be true, but I feel like, you know how people back in the day used to, or if you hear your parents sound, be like, oh no, back in the day, like, depression, like, what? Or, like, anxiety, like, set, you know what I mean? Like, but I feel like these problems have always been there. You know, in the Bible says nothing's new under the sun. But I feel like because of social media, it's kind of now been publicized that people actually go through these things. And I feel like I think that's what people need to do: give exposure to most of these things. Because I feel like when I hear my parents say, like, oh, like, it wasn't that big of a deal, I feel like, oh, you just didn't know. You guys just didn't know who was going through it. You know what I mean? And now we have the benefit of knowing.
We know the symptoms.
It's like, and something that I hadn't ever realised before, but when I was reading the Bible and reading about Jesus, you know, before he goes and dies on the cross and he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's literally, like, crying out to his father, and he's like, you know, he doesn't want to do it. Like, he's feeling some of those emotions. Like, he's feeling anxious. Yeah. He's, you know, he's scared.
And that was Jesus.
And this is it. Like, and you read that and you're like, wow, if even like the literal Son of God felt anxiety, then of course I'm going to feel anxiety. Course, yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's just something that I need.
It's a feeling that needs to be felt.
Yeah.
No, that's...
Heal to heal, mate. That's
what heal
I like.
To
heal. I like that. Yeah, that was a very good conversation.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
On a lighter note, let's go to some current news going on.
What's happening?
Yo, this is crazy. So we've all seen the Jeremy Kyle show, right?
Yeah.
That show has been cancelled now because a Portsmouth local committed suicide.
It was a Portsmouth local.
Portsmouth local committed suicide when he went on the show.
That's not a lot of note, is it?
Wait, no, actually, that's not. I'm sorry, I actually don't know the show.
Jeremy Kyle, yeah, you do. The Jeremy Kyle show when they go did the lie detector test to see whether. Okay. It's your son or not.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Okay, right. Sure.
So then a Portsmouth local went on the show.
Yeah.
And then I think they
failed a lie detector test, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, what?
Failed like a lie detector test.
He got exposed. And then on that same night, he committed suicide. So now the whole show has been like...
cancelled.
Wow.
But I read this morning, right, that like apparently like Jeremy, like he was on to like people wanting to like cancel his show or like to axe his show because it's like he gets like £2 million a year contract or something. Like it's pretty mad. It's an expensive show to run, and he'd feared for a while that they were gonna look for a reason to cancel it, and then he feels like he's become the scapegoat for this situation.
Yeah,
he's living though because he's got peas, of course.
Exactly.
But that's crazy because Jeremy Kyle was like everyone used to watch that in England. Like, that used to be the biggest
coming from school. Your mum's doing the Ireland.
So it's gonna be interesting to see where that goes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, actually, that was not a lighter note. I don't know why I said it was a lighter note.
Yeah, that's not a lighter note, bro.
If we're going on to Game of Thrones next, that's not a lighter note.
Okay. An actual lighter note.
Yeah.
There's a professional slapping tournament in Russia where people just slap each other like one by one, and then if you can't take it no more, then you're out, and like you win a prize, like a cash prize.
How much is the prize, bro?
Are you ready for this? $270. That's all it is.
Come on, man.
Wow. They can't be struggling.
Yo, but it's quite, like there's a guy who's like he weighs 370 pounds and he just slaps.
Has anyone? People.
It's like a proper tournament, like one by one, you knock him out through your slaps until you get to the final. And like, I saw the final, and it's just this fat guy. It's not a fat guy. So the other guy goes first, and like it did nothing to the fat guy. The fat guy slapped him. He rocked back. He was in the gun lean. And then, but he was still in it. And then he got one more slap against him, and then he was knocked out.
This reminds me of this advert. I don't know if anyone's seen it. I saw it on Facebook. I can't even remember what it was basically advertising, but it was at like a barbecue, and it's like set in Australia. And there's this guy, and this like kid comes up to him, and he like steals his burger or something, and he like slaps the kid. And then the woman comes over, and she's like, "Oh my goodness, like you've just slapped my kid!" And then like he slaps her, and then he just goes through the party, and like everyone's coming up to him one by one. He just like slaps them. The police run in. He's slapping them all. I have to find a few guys.
That's funny. But yeah, like there's an actual professional tournament. Yeah, that's me. Where people slap each other.
This is in Russia, though, right?
Yeah. Well, it starts off in Russia, so it's probably going to expand.
Some other things that I saw in Russia recently. There's this thing called Medieval M1, and it's basically UFC. But like knights, so they literally have like shields and swords and like all of that crazy gear, and they're like fighting, and it's a thing that people go to.
Wait, do they get bodied? Do you body people? Do they die? Do you kill
them? No, people don't die, but like the ref
jumps close to death, but, like, I'm assuming, because it's actual weapons.
Yeah, it's weapons.
That's peak, bro.
It's nuts.
Yeah, so my question to all of this here is like, are we getting bored as humans? Are we just like bored
with better costumes?
Literally.
Are we just bored with like life now? So we just
sports.
That's just it's crazy.
Yeah, man.
We're fighting over with weapons, and we're slapping each other for $270.
You know, one thing I deep right is that people actually still see war as a solution, like. You know, 2,000 something years later, and like we're talking about like peace, years. Like we're you know we're people, you know we love each other, and still we're sending people to die. Honestly, we send people to die.
So like with like war and army, one thing that's always scared me is the people that are placed on the front line.
Yeah,
because they know that. I mean, they know that the risk of them dying is way higher.
Back in the day, right? They used to like the front line would just be, would just have guns, and they'll shoot the front line, and whoever was left would like.
It's like the line wars, isn't it? Yeah.
So literally, when you're in the front line, they'll they'll have guns, and you'll be pointing back at them. And if you make it, you make it. You know what I mean?
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, the front line has always scared me, because you low-key have a kind of feeling that you're going to die. Like, you've accepted death.
You really have. I can't lie.
That's just scary.
You guys are speaking like you've been on the front line, but...
No, but that's crazy. Because, I mean, obviously you can empathize, sort of. Like, you just be like, damn, like...
Yeah, like, this is it, bro.
Yeah, especially, like... And like, the one thing that used to scare me the most was, like, conscription as well.
What's that?
Could you imagine?
Like, when you're enrolled into the army without any choice.
Yeah.
It's like a legal thing that you have to do, right?
Yeah. In North Korea, I'm guessing, like, it's peak out there.
It's still in a lot of countries, actually. Yeah.
On the topic of, of death, Game of Thrones.
Woo!
Season 8.
Mad.
It's, I don't know, because I still like some aspects.
Okay.
But it's just, it's not the same, it's not the same as what it used to be.
I think, honestly, like, and no spoilers to anyone who's not listened.
Wait, because he hasn't seen the episode, right?
Yeah. So no spoilers, but like, I don't know, man.
It's different.
Everything's just going crazy right now.
apparently, this last episode was the worst reviewed Game of Thrones episode ever.
You want to talk about it?
No, that was,
I haven't watched it.
I think that was the episode, the last one you watched.
Yeah, no, this last one.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah, it was. Really? On Rotten Tomatoes.
That doesn't surprise
me. It got 54%.
Yeah, they've kind of, I feel like they've kind of. But not, did anyone really think it was going to end with Happily Ever After? I don't know.
Not at 6 episodes.
No, this is
firstly,
it, right?
Firstly, 6 episodes, you can't conclude
Game of Thrones in
6 episodes.
This is the thing that has annoyed me the most, I think, is because obviously like it's been rushed and they've got 6 episodes, a little bit longer. But it's like, so there's been like these kind of like character arcs that have been building.
Right.
Relationships that have been building for like the entire
running
of the show over years. And then in like one season, in like 2 episodes, like someone goes from one place to another, and it's like, what?
They rushed it. And also, what's her name? Daenerys. It took her like 5 seasons to come across to Westeros, right?
Yeah.
And then now everyone's traveling in like the space of 5 minutes. Yeah. They literally just rushed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. I feel like they kind of ruined it towards
the end. So my theory, yeah.
They needed the books.
who's gonna sit on the Game of Thrones? Who wins?
I told Taz this last week. And I'm still with it, that Daenerys goes mad crazy.
Right.
And Jon, who loves her, is stuck between, do I kill her or do I give her benefit of the doubt? I still think Jon Snow is going to kill Daenerys.
He doesn't want to be king, though, does he? Like,
he doesn't. But then, so then I think he's going to appoint Sansa.
And
Tyrion is going to be the hand of Sansa.
I reckon Sansa. I reckon she'll win. But then she wants to be, she's always wanted to be queen, isn't she? But a queen of the north. But maybe she'll become queen of Westeros.
Then who would be the one in Winterfell?
She'll run both, mate. Don't worry.
And obviously people really love her in Winterfell, so they'll be like, "I cool."
Yeah.
But yeah, you need to watch this episode.
I need to, because everyone, I just saw like memes with like Daenerys like all over, and like I remember I saw this. I think I've kind of saw a spoiler, Loki, because it was like, I'm not going to say, don't say what you know.
I
know. Don't say what you know.
Okay.
But I remember I saw the spoiler where Thanos was talking to Daenerys. Yeah, it was a meme.
Okay. Nice.
He's like, yo, even I kill half.
Okay,
that's funny.
So I don't know if that's a spoiler. I feel like that's a spoiler. But yeah, he was like, yo, I killed half. No, you know what I mean?
So for you, who do you think is gonna end up on the throne?
I feel like your theory is kinda justifiable.
One name, who would it be?
I don't know, I would want Jon Snow to be there.
Jon Snow, that'd be
He's already been a king once and he kinda like blew it. So
yeah.
I feel like I feel like Sansa actually is a good choice.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean
there's a petition going around that Season 8 needs to be remade.
Wow, that's never going to happen then.
The thing is, in one day, they got 25,000 signatures.
Yeah, but in one day, they there was like millions of people signed to do another, vote for leaving the EU.
Brexit.
Like, come on, like, these things, like, they've happened, mate. People,
I think
it's like that stage of denial. Like, it's already happened.
What they're saying is that they're very disappointed with
Read the books then. That's the alternative.
People don't like reading, man.
I hate reading.
People don't like reading.
Yeah.
But yeah, I low-key blame... Actually, not blame, but... A blame has to go to George R. Martin as well. because I feel like he wasn't as involved in,
yeah, he kind of gave season the authority seven, season to finish yeah, off.
To do your own thing.
Apparently he gave them like one thing that was like, okay, this needs to happen in the end, but apart from that, you can choose how the characters get.
But I, right, I feel like it's his fault, really.
I think he's partly to blame.
Because I feel like the show took a life of its own, really. Like, yeah, yeah. You know, based on him, though. He just made a book. You know what I mean?
It's not just a book. It's
no, the whole show, as in, he made the book. Then it became a show.
I get that, but I'm saying the last two seasons, there was no book to follow.
I mean, yeah, I feel like I'm a... Because, you know, I'm a fan of Kanye West. And I remember Kanye said that...
You're not gonna quote Kanye,
are you? I really am gonna. No, from an artistic point of view. Okay. Yeah. Not from his... Not from politics.
Make America great again.
But, like, from his artistic side, he said that you know, fans have some... Especially in this day and age where everything's like at the click of a finger, you know, you can just get like Amazon deliveries, you don't even have to go outside no more. You know, everything's like quick. People just want like a quick fix. People want the next new thing. And they don't give like artists enough time to give the people what they really deserve. Mm. So people have been rushing. So people obviously with the expectation of Game of Thrones are rushing it. They don't want to wait for another book. They want a new season.
Mm.
You know, and because of that, like, true. You don't give like the creator of the actual show
enough time
to give you the probably what he imagined as the first, because if he's telling people, okay, this is what I want at the end, right, that means like the rest of the show, most of the show is like what the people think. So imagine if like the book comes out, right, and it's way different.
It is that's what he said, the author. He was like, my books are going to be different than how the show went down.
So I feel like you read the book and you're like, damn, like this is even why didn't this happen?
But let's be honest, could we have had the patience to wait more than two years?
I need that series.
Yeah, I needed that in my life, like now.
You know what? I watched a video the other day and it was like a compilation of the different Game of Thrones actors and being interviewed on what their thoughts were on the final season of Game of Thrones. And Kit Harington, the guy that plays Jon Snow, he was asked to sum up the season in one word. Can you guess what he said?
No, what did he say?
Disappointing.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah.
And then he was like,
that.
Oh, no, only joking.
Nah, he's not
joking. There's like three or four other things, and like there's one where there's like a Amelia Clarke on the red carpet, and Grey Worm, I don't know, the guy that's also a rapper, right?
Yeah, Richie or something.
Yeah, and again, like they ask her, oh, you know, what do you think? And everyone's just like looking at each other like,
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
When your own main characters are saying that, you know that the showrunner's messed up.
Nuts.
But the thing is, they're still making money.
Of course.
Of course.
They're still making peas. And I feel like the showrunners capitalised on the demand of Game of Thrones. So, if I'm a showrunner, and I'm making so much money based on this new season, do I really care that my fans don't like the show? So, put yourself in the position of...
You'd think if someone has spent that many years... like producing and directing a show, like you'd want your fans to be happy, or at least I would. But
yeah, honestly, that's a lot of time spent.
Yeah, it's a lot of time. Like they, you know, they read the reviews and they read what people say about it online and on Twitter and stuff. And like, I'm sure they care. But
yeah.
Hey, on another note, actually, my girlfriend just watched Endgame.
Yeah,
finally.
And she was saying, you know, what she was saying.
What did you guys mean?
I feel like Infinity War is still better for me.
Yes! Okay. I said this morning.
And also, like, because personally, I would have wanted more action. Because I was more of a...
There was like an hour...
It took the second half of the film to get...
It's like the third.
Because I feel like even the action was kind of like... Kind of just like, all right.
Yeah.
You know, because like Infinity War, everyone had their own individual fights. Right, it seemed more coordinated.
Different groups.
Yeah, you know, and this time it was just like people were just fighting. Yeah, it was a fight, not a war. You know, it was just a fight, and I don't know, because it was just more of like a story, which is good. The story aspect of it was like the best part.
Unpopular opinion, but Infinity War was better than Endgame.
Because the thing is, the story aspect of like Endgame was amazing.
Yeah,
because like the way they went back and
that was my favorite bit. Where I remember going through all the old and you're like reliving your old films like 2004.
That was the best part.
That was great.
I feel like the battle part for me was like, I needed more action, but the story, if they had the story of Endgame with the action in Infinity War, then that would have been...
But I feel like Endgame had to be shot like that. It had to be an hour and a half of setup in order for the end to make sense.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because the send-off, like, it was done perfectly.
Favorite scene? One scene, what would it be?
What, Endgame?
Yeah, Mama's Fat Four. Fat Four when he was just chilling. When they go to new New Asgardian. He goes in. It's just Fat Four like playing Fortnite, drinking cans.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. That was playing Fortnite.
I was funny, man. Dude, I was like, no, but you know, I was so annoyed that Thor was fat for the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the magic just like braided his beard. Like, you know, he commanded lightning and all it did was braid his beard, bro. I was like, come on, bro, get in shape.
I feel like for me the one scene was when all the Doctor Strange's teleport things opened up. Everyone came through.
That was mad. Yeah.
That was really cool because you forgot that they actually came back.
Yeah.
So many people, and then he goes, "Avengers assemble." I got goosebumps when he said that.
Yeah, that was good. It was good. What did you think of like Captain America like grabbing the hammer? I thought, for me personally, it was cringy and cool because it was like you expected it, but it was cringy because it was like okay, you guys wanted.
Apparently, people were like getting up in cinema and cheering like when that happened.
It was an exciting period for me, man. Okay. I'm gonna be honest, because you know Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
When he kind of lifted it, I was like, are they gonna reference this again? In that film, actually. So,
I feel it was like a giveaway, It was weird because it was one of those like, all right, guys, you guys wanted to see Captain America hold the hammer. Here you go. You know what I mean?
It was the way that he was using it. It was like, who taught you this? Anyone taught you this? But yeah. Now I think we've covered everything that needs to be covered this week. Thank you for coming on, man,
and being vulnerable.
We appreciate that.
Mm. Oh yeah, always last question. Like in 10 years time, where do you see yourself?
If everything goes right.
Cardiff.
Wow.
Really? You wanna go there?
Yeah.
That would be lit. Yeah, I was thinking that as well.
We know why, but like why do you wanna go Cardiff?
So the church that we go to, Harper Church, they're moving, we're basically going and planting in Cardiff, right? And there's like 80,000 students in Cardiff, there's like 3 different universities, hardly any people going to church.
Yeah.
It'd just be super exciting. It looks like a great place.
I can see you there, man.
Yeah, man, I'd love
it. Like, telling your story, you know, I can see you there.
Here we go.
But what about Abby, your girl? Are you going to leave her in England, or are you going to bring her with you?
It's got to be her choice, isn't it? I mean, I'd love her to come out there with me. But
what if there's no space for her in the...
In the church?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think she wants to work for the church, so that's not a problem.
So she'd have to find a job there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alright. That'd be wavy, man.
That'd be good.
Nice.
It's been your boy Izzy.
It's been your boy Tess.
And we'll catch you next week.
Catch you later.